Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is sponsored in part by Prince Associates, Send in the Clowns, the Phoenix Tube Company, CelebrityTrips.com, the law firm of Decalator Cohen and DePrisco, Solomon Jewelers, and Relish Restaurant of Kings Park. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Joining us now is a sixth-round draft pick of the Boston Red Sox in the 2008 Major League Baseball draft. He attended Yale University, where in 2007 he won the NCAA batting title by hitting .467. He led the NCAA with a .873 slugging percentage. That year, he also set the Ivy League record with a 25-game hitting streak. In addition, he set the Ivy League all-time career home run record with 33. This path month, he was a starting catcher in all three games for Israel. That's why I'm actually wearing my Team Israel hat tonight at the 2017 World Baseball Classic qualifier. His two-run home run in the crucial Game 3 was a key to Israel moving on to Seoul. It is a thrill to welcome to WLIE Sports Talk New York, Ryan LaVarnway. Welcome, Ryan.
How's it going, guys?
Going great.
Good yontif.
It's good yontif. We can say that, too.
Good yontif, yeah.
All right. At Yale, you know, you were a philosophy major. Now, philosophy is a study of the theoretical basis of a particular branch of knowledge or experience. So I'm just wondering.
You looked that up, of course, didn't you? You didn't know that off the top of your head.
Oh, I knew that off the top of my head.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, does that discipline help at all when developing a game plan as a catcher on how to attack a hitter?
I don't know about that. I've been asked over the years so many times when people are like, "Oh, you went to Yale. How did that help you in baseball?" And I don't know. Maybe learning how to kind of dissect things and think differently, think outside the box, it might have helped. But I don't know if there's a direct correlation.
You know, so you started your Yale career as a right fielder. What did Coach John Stuper see in you that felt a move to behind the plate would be beneficial to both you as well as to the Bulldogs?
Honestly, it was I caught in high school on the junior varsity team, and you know, when it was time for me to move up to varsity, we had another kid that was my grade, but he had kind of grown earlier. He hit puberty. He was a man in high school, and I was still growing. So I went out to the outfield, and that's how I ended up getting recruited to college. But then during my sophomore year, or I guess it was my freshman year, I came home for the winter break, and I was at a Hanukkah party of my friend who I'd grown up with, played Little League with. His dad had coached our all-star teams. He said, "Hey, when are you going to stop messing around in the outfield and start catching again?" I was like, "I don't know, Steve. That's a great idea." So I went home, or I went back to school in January, and I said, "Coach, I think I want to catch." He was like, "Well, let's see what you got." And, you know, after my first pen, the Yale coach had pitched in the big leagues, John Stuper. He won a World Series with the St. Louis Cardinals. He's like, "You got pretty good hands. Let's see what we got with you back there." And then it just kind of took off from there.
You know, you choose Yale as the college you're going to. Yale is not considered a baseball powerhouse. You can probably count on one hand the other people who've gone to the major leagues from Yale, including your teammate Craig Breslow. So how much was baseball, a professional baseball career, on your mind when you went to Yale, and how did things change to say, "Hey, maybe this is something you might be able to do"?
Honestly, when I was applying to colleges, you know, I got recruited basically exclusively by Ivy League schools. I got recruited by Harvard, Yale, Cornell, Dartmouth, and then UC Davis, which was a D2 at the time. Now it's a D1. But Yale kind of recruited me the hardest for baseball. And when I always had good grades. I was always in the advanced classes. It was kind of a no-brainer for me. It was my best academic option. It was my best baseball option at the time. And when I got there, you know, I always wanted to play baseball. I never knew if it was very realistic. And then when I got to my sophomore season and I did all those things that you mentioned in the ninth intro you gave me, it became a reality. Scouts started showing up, and it didn't matter where I was. I was good enough that they were going to find me.
We're talking to Israeli national team Ryan LaVarnway, if you just tuned in. Given all you accomplished at the college level, were you surprised that you went into the sixth round, and actually, you're the very last pick of the day? I have to imagine that day must have felt like an eternity.
It was a long day. We were talking to teams before the draft, and they were talking maybe higher earlier in the draft, but actually 2 weeks before the draft, we were playing a doubleheader against Harvard. I got a little competitive. I don't know if you know me as a player, but I have very slow foot speed. I got waved from second on a single at the center fielder. I was out by like 8 steps. I'm super competitive. I tried to jump over the catcher's head, and I ended up breaking my wrist really bad, and I had surgery. So I was sitting in front of the computer at my house in California watching the draft with my hand in a cast, and I wasn't going to be able to play until the end of the summer anyway. So when that happened, a lot of the team said, hey, you know what, we'll see you next year. Go ahead and graduate. And I was like, I still want to play pro, but I think that's why I ended up dropping as low as I did, was because, you know, I wouldn't be able to play that year anyway.
You make your way up the Red Sox minor league ladder. On August 18th, 2011, you make your major league debut in Kansas City as the DH. I kind of get what Terry Francona was trying to do, getting you into the major leagues and getting you there slowly. If you had your choice, do you think you would have rather made your debut as a starting catcher rather than the DH?
I think that had a lot to do with the dynamics of the team and the injuries that were going on at the time. When they called me up, it was in August before the rosters were expanding. They didn't really need to call me up when they did. But David was, you know, dealing with a little ailment, and Uke was dealing with a little ailment at the time. And when they flew me to Kansas City, I wasn't sure I was going to be activated or get sent on a plane right back to AAA. So they ended up putting Uke on the DL for the 2 weeks. And, you know, David was dealing with a little issue. I think it was maybe his Achilles at the time. But I DH'd for David until he was healthy again, and then right back down to AAA when we got that hurricane.
It's interesting that you bring up David. This past season, we saw maybe the single greatest season by a player during his last season. The tributes continue still to pour into this day about what an amazing teammate David Ortiz was. Getting a chance to play with Big Poppy, what did it mean to you?
Oh, my goodness. He's one of the best of all time. Really, really incredible baseball player. Really, really knew what he was doing as a hitter. The fact that I think he got better as he got older just shows how smart and how dedicated he was to his craft. And just being able to be around him and see the joy and the happiness with which he played the game, not to mention, you know, how good he was and how consistent his routine, and he really knew what he wanted to do on a daily basis, what he needed to do to be successful. You know, he pulled me aside a couple of times. He pulled me to go look at my own video to see if he could help me with my swing. He never needed to do that. He was well established in his career. So I appreciate every moment I got to spend with David, and I wish him the best in his next endeavors.
You know, you're born in Burbank, California. You went to college in Connecticut. You played in the NECBL in Manchester, New Hampshire. You played for the Boston Red Sox in Lowell, Portland, and Pawtucket. So it looks like you spent a lot of your formative years in the New England area. I have to think that it had to be pretty cool getting the opportunity to play a home game at Fenway Park. What was that whole experience like for you?
Oh, my God. Fenway Park. Fenway was the second baseball stadium I ever, or maybe third. You know, growing up in California, I loved the Dodgers. You know, we would go to Angels games sometimes. But then when I went up to Yale, my best friend in the world was a diehard Red Sox fan, diehard Patriots fan. So, you know, not having a pro football team in L.A., I converted to all Boston sports, you know, Red Sox, Patriots. It was easy. And then to get drafted by the Red Sox, everyone was freaking out. I was super excited. And then when I got to Fenway, that place is unreal. You know, you wear a one-ear flap helmet for the first time when you get to the major leagues. You're used to wearing the two. And those fans feel like they're right in your ear. You can see them out of your peripheral vision. You can hear them. You're in the on-deck circle. They're all yelling at you, good and bad. It's just so much fun. And the fact, you know, especially coming from Los Angeles, I don't know if you've ever been to a Dodger game.
It's a little
mellow.
The fans
are just different.
Yeah.
So
the fans are just different in Boston than they are in L.A.
So you get to Fenway Park. As a right-handed batter, you take a look. And what's your first thought when you see the wall?
Your first thought is, that's not far enough. I feel like I could touch it from home plate. You know, I've been on top of the monster to watch the game as a fan, and home plate looks really, really far away. But from home plate, it looks like you could reach out and touch it almost. It looks like it's just, that's not far enough, you know?
It's so funny that you say that, because remember, AJ and I coached a travel team, and we took kids when they were, I guess, 15 to widen their college.
A little older. They were close.
17 maybe. Yeah. It was high school. They were at high school at that point. Yeah. Widener College. And Widener College is fashioned over the exact dimensions of Fenway.
Wall.
They have a blue wall. And we both looked at it. All the kids as 17-year-olds were saying, I can hit that. Yeah. It's like so funny that you mentioned that.
And then it's really easy to develop bad habits and just try to, you know, lift and separate, drop, hit homers. And it's actually... it's just as far as it needs to be because that monster, I feel like, takes away more homers than it lets up.
Interesting. You know, your first 3 years, you see the Boston Red Sox change managers each and every year. Terry Francona, your rookie year, Bobby Valentine, your second, and then John Farrell, your third year. Was there any one of those three managers that you connected with more than the others?
Well, I didn't get to play with Tito for very long, but, you know, I had a great respect for the reputation and the way that the players interacted with him. And then John Farrell, obviously, was just a strong manager, strong presence in the locker room. So, you know, I really enjoyed playing for both of those two guys.
You look at some of the pitchers you've caught so far in your career. Jonathan Papelbon, Dice K, Aaron Cook, Rich Hill, Zach Britton, Julio Teheran, to name a few. Which pitcher did you enjoy working with the most?
Honestly, out of the list that you just gave me, John Lester was incredible. I felt like in the bullpen, on the side, in the game, his focus is just so high, and you can almost catch him with your eyes closed. He knows exactly what he wants to do with the ball and exactly how to do it. He can manipulate it, make it do whatever he wants. Another guy, you know, Clay Buchholz can do the same thing. I've never seen a guy, Clay Buchholz and Bobby Jenks, the two of them, can make a ball go any which direction that they want. It's so impressive, and it almost looks like magic when it comes out of their hand.
For those of you that are just tuning in, we're talking with Team Israel's Ryan LaVarnway. You know, along those lines about pitchers, we hear announcers say so many times that he's got a heavy fastball, or in the case of Seth Lugo, the rotation and spin on his pitch is different than any other. As a catcher, is it more difficult when they say a fastball is heavier? I mean, the old saying is that Don Drysdale threw the heaviest fastball of any pitcher ever. Is it different catching based on the way they throw a fastball or the rotation on a particular breaking pitch?
Absolutely. It's not only different catching, it's also different calling pitches. When they say that it's a heavy fastball, generally that means is that by the time it gets to the plate, they put some spin on it where it's got some heavy sink on it, and it's dropping hard, and it's going to cause a lot of ground balls. And especially from a right-handed pitcher, it's diving towards the catcher's glove hand side, which is the hardest pitch for catchers to really receive and make look good to the umpire. You're trying to get as many strikes as you can. When a pitcher's throwing a lighter fastball, you know, they're getting a lot of backspin. Maybe the ball rises a little bit. If a hitter happens to connect, it's going to be easier for that ball to get out of the ballpark. So different based on how I'm trying to catch it and how I'm trying to get the hitter out.
I don't want to bring up a sore point, but how much more difficult is it to catch a knuckleballer?
Oh, a knuckleball. You know what? It's like trying to catch a butterfly with your fingertips. That was how Gary Tuck described it to me, and it couldn't be more true. And you know what? I don't think that's too much of a sore point. I know I got that record with Stephen Wright that year. I tied it, I guess. But, you know, I'm not ashamed of that at all. You know, I was out there. It was his first start in the big leagues. He was a little amped up. We were in a dome. It was a little bit different. And, you know, that's what happens with knuckleballs. Sometimes they're on. I caught him two other relief appearances where we came back from behind, five inning outings with no pass ball. So that's just kind of what you get with a knuckleball.
Do you use a different glove for knuckleball?
Absolutely. You have to.
It's almost as hard as it is to catch as it is to hit. That's what they say. I mean, it's brutal. Saturday, exactly. August 18th, 2012, Yankee Stadium. You make a little bit of history as well as Yale class of 2002, which A.J. alluded to, Craig Breslow, become the first all-Yale battery in the majors since 1883. And I didn't go back far enough, but I have to imagine it's probably the only Jewish all-Yale battery ever to, you know, pitch in the major leagues. You know, looking at through the lens of now being a member of Team Israel, does that particular moment in your career hold any more significance, meaning now?
I got to be honest. That meant a lot more to the historians, I guess, than it did to me. For me, it was more cool because Craig has always been really great to me. He came back. He was in the major leagues when I was still in college. John Stuper, the head coach, you know, got us together. He said, Craig, will you talk to Ryan? I think he has a chance. And then my first couple spring trainings with the Red Sox, Craig was with the Twins in the same city in spring training. We went out to lunch, out to dinner a couple times. He really took me under his wing. And as an older player, I always have had a ton of respect for him. And he's always been so nice, you know, without getting any benefit out of it himself other than just friendship. So for me, it was cool just because I got to hang out and catch my buddy in the big leagues.
You know, going into 2012, Baseball Prospectus had you ranked as high as the 98th best prospect in all professional baseball. Met fans that are listening right now, just to put that in perspective, Jeris Familia slotted in at 89 and Noah Syndergaard at 93. So that's a pretty good neighborhood to be into. You were basically the fourth best in the Red Sox system, and you take a look at the fruits of the Red Sox system, what that ended up being this past year. That seems like ancient history, as that was one injury six Major League Baseball organizations ago. At one point, you actually changed teams four times in a 19-day span in December of 2014. Could you ever imagine back at looking at that list in 2012 that you would be where you are now and that you would be representing Israel in the World Baseball Classic?
Oh, I don't know. It's been crazy. It's been a crazy fun ride. You know, this game, you never know what it's gonna give to you, what you have, what it's gonna ask from you. But it's been great, and I think I like where I'm at going forward. I'm not sure which team I'll be with next year, but I know that I'm excited to play. I think I have a lot of good baseball left in me. And I'm really excited to head to Korea for this WBC. I don't know which of the major league players we're going to be able to recruit for Team Israel, but I think we got a pretty good shot. We loved the team we brought to Brooklyn. We had a lot of fun, a great group of guys, and we played some good baseball.
Well, you mentioned, you know, what players you could recruit, which is interesting. Now that the tournament actually starts before players report to spring training, so it's conceivable that come tournament time, guys like Ryan Braun, Ian Kinsler, Jock Peterson, Kevin Pillar, Danny Valencia, Alex Bergman, Scott Feldman, our own New York Met Ty Kelly could join the team. I know that's the rules of the tournament, but you mentioned the great group of guys that actually were able to get you qualified. You know, how would that feel when these guys come in and potentially taking roster spots of the guys that actually got you to be able to play in the tournament?
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, we're trying to win. I don't know who's in charge of setting the roster. I certainly know that it's not me. but, you know, we love the guys we went with. If we go to Korea with the same roster we played in Brooklyn with, then we'll be super happy with it. And if the people who are in charge, the powers that be, make adjustments, it's because they think they're going to try to make the team better, and I don't think anyone's going to argue with that.
Cody Decker mentioned to me at the Classic that it was an amazing experience for him getting to play with an entire team of Jewish ballplayers. As growing up, he usually was the only Jewish player on the team. He said it was truly a unique feeling. I was shocked that he had never played baseball in the Maccabi games, something, incidentally, both AJ and I, our sons, played and I coached as well. So how about you? Had you ever played, like, maybe on a Maccabi team, or was this also your first experience, and what was it like for you?
I think I must have grown up in a more Jewish area of California than a lot of other people, because, you know, I feel like on my teams it was 50-50 Jewish players to non-Jewish players, so it was never really an issue. I did play on the Maccabi games when I was 14 years old. The games were in New Jersey. The California team, we won it. I've never really felt like I was the only Jewish player on the team, but you know what, it was cool playing with the Team Israel and playing with a couple guys that are actually from Israel. I actually had the bullpen coach, Alon Leichman, room with me, and that was a really great experience. Got to hear some of his perspectives and his stories. But the other thing was, being in Brooklyn, felt like Israel was playing home games. You had all the Jewish elementary schools singing the national anthem of Israel, all the kids with the Torahs, you know, screaming, the yarmulkes screaming and yelling. It was a really, really cool experience to see that, all the young Jewish boys rooting for Jewish athletes, because that's something you don't get to see very often in America.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because it seems like only yesterday, I mean, the first time that they played, we had Brad Asmus and Sean right. Green on, and then when they were qualifying, we were on the air, it was a Sunday night, and we were streaming it, and it was a close game, then they lost it, and then this particular time, AJ and I were also on
the air.
I had just come from, you know, batting practice with you guys. We're tracking it, and we're watching the no-hitter going on. So, as you mentioned, the atmosphere there, How different is it, you know, when you're a Red Sox or when you're Toronto, you know, Blue Jay, you're representing a city. How different is it when you're putting on a jersey of a country and on top of that, pretty much a religion, and you're actually creating pride? I mean, I've never been to Israel. I am going this February, but I felt a tremendous sense of pride. So when you're playing for the name in front of the jersey, which is a country and somewhat a religion, is it different than playing for the Red Sox?
Absolutely. I would agree with you that I definitely felt a huge sense of pride. I felt so proud to be Jewish and be representing. I have never been to Israel myself. My sister took birthright. My wife and her sister took birthright. My in-laws are actually in Israel right now, seeing all the sites and visiting the wall. But you know, I would love to go there. It was a sense of pride for me being Jewish and feeling the closeness with that, as opposed to playing for a city that I wasn't from, you know, that I just moved to. Playing for Israel was a big source of pride for me.
So obviously when the Angels were going on to the World Series, they had the rally monkey, but you guys actually had the mensch on the bench on the bench. So can you share a little bit about that, what it was and how that started?
That was all Cody. And then the mensch ended up taking the locker next to mine in the locker room, just because I happen to have an empty locker. They always end up giving the catcher more space because we have all the gear. So the mensch and I hung out a little bit. I ended up drinking some of his Manischewitz when we were celebrating. But bringing him out to the bench and bringing him out on the field was all Cody.
Do you think getting the opportunity to play on the world stage might give you, as well as guys like Cody Decker, Josh Satin, Ike Davis, a better chance for scouts to see them than if you were to remain with a minor league organization and got prepared for spring training?
I hope so. I mean, any opportunity that is afforded to you, and I hope to take full advantage of, but we're not doing it for exposure. We're doing it to win and to represent Israel and to try to grow the game of baseball in Israel. They said that 4 years ago there was a 50% increase, I believe they said, of baseball being played in the state of Israel, and we're hoping to get that again this year and raise some funding to build some more fields and get some more coaches out there and get more people playing the game.
I hope you guys do well, because it was 4 years that I didn't get to wear my Team Israel hat. I'm wearing it now. I haven't taken it off since you guys won against Great Britain, so it was a tremendous moment.
I saw you earlier. You weren't wearing a hat at all.
Not. Or I know. I don't wear it every moment.
So you haven't
moment.
Taken it off. You know.
You know what I meant. Ryan, thanks so much for your time tonight. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. AJ and I obviously will be rooting hard for you and your teammates, and we hope to have you guys on, you know, after you shock the world, a bigger miracle than the 8, you know, days of oil and the candles. That will be the biggest miracle of them all.
Okay, yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks so much. Ryan LeVarnway of Team Israel.